This is Deborah Bunka, and you're listening to Heart of Iowa, a show featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in Central Iowa. Welcome. Today we're talking about the great outdoors, and we're featuring a presentation hosted by the League of Women Voters on Thursday, May 16th at Northminster Presbyterian Church in Ames. The guest speaker was Mike Cox, Storey County Conservation Director. Mr. Cox speaks about the mission of the Conservation Center, its structure, its facilities, and its plans for the future in Storey County. We join the proceedings as League of Women Voters presentation co-chair Miriam Patterson introduces Storey County Conservation Director Mike Cox.
It's a real pleasure for me tonight to introduce Mike Cox, not only because the subject he'll be talking to us about is of great interest to me, but also because I knew Mike Cox when he was just a little guy growing up in Conrad, Iowa, where our four boys also did most of their growing up. And Mike and I had to think about this a little bit to know just where they fell age-wise, and it turns out that Mike is a little younger than my sons, about 5 years younger than our youngest, Matt. We lived in a town where everybody knows everyone, and so I knew Mike, and we all took an interest in all the kids because they sort of belonged to us all. It was really fun then for me to hear a couple years ago that Mike Cox was coming to be the new Storey County Conservation Officer. And I thought, well, I know a Mike Cox, but when they told me he was coming from Alaska, I thought, well, no, that's not the right Mike Cox. And it turns out that indeed it was the same Mike Cox. Something about Mike's history and in his career. He graduated with a bachelor's in fisheries and wildlife biology here at ISU in 1992, and then went to work at the Wildlife Care Center at the ISU Vet Med Complex for a couple of years. This is interesting to me too, Mike, because then you were director at the Vermont Raptor Center from 1995 to 2001. And interestingly enough, that same youngest son I spoke of moved to Vermont that same year. So there's a connection there too. Then he was manager of Pioneer Park, Fairbanks, North Star Borough in Alaska from 2001 to 2007. And then director of Parks and Recreation in Fairbanks from 2007 to 2011. And then he may need to tell us what brought him back to Iowa, but we're really glad that you're back, Mike, and glad that we can hear from you tonight.
Well, thank you, Miriam. Thank you very much. What brought me back? Well, let's see. I'm glad I wasn't in Alaska this last winter when they had such cold weather. I talked to some friends up there over the course of the winter, and they said it was the coldest winter that they had there, at least in recent history. Regularly, they were getting temps, which I would have had at my house, of minus 60 degrees. So why I came back? Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. Thank you for everything that you do. What you do is very important, and I think you all understand that. You know, we do it because our hearts are in the right place, that we want to leave this place better than the way we have it now. That's always the goal, and I commend everyone for working toward that. I guess I'll get into what we'll talk about a little bit tonight. I'm going to give you not necessarily, you know, catalog of what we have in Storey County, but it's going to be very informal. But before I really get started, just so I understand a little bit about how well everyone here understands Storey County conservation. Are you guys familiar with Story County Conservation and its programs? Can you just shout out a few things that you've, or maybe interactions you've had with Story County, or areas that you're familiar with?
You are Hickory Grove.
Hickory Grove.
McFarland Park.
McFarland.
Waldenum.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I have big shoes to fill.
The goats.
The goats. Very good. That's a new one. Very good. Then that gives me a good idea of how much you know. You're familiar with Story County Conservation, and you should know that, you know, the mission of conservation is to enhance the quality of life for residents of Story County. And what does that mean? Well, we try to enhance it through wisely managing our natural resources. What does it mean to have a good quality of life? We talk about it a lot. It's kind of, you know, for years, it's something we want to improve. Of course, it means different things to everybody. But I think that the role that our natural resources and our parks and our recreational opportunities have in that is incredible and sometimes overlooked. You know, getting outside to enjoy nature does many things. It helps us physically. We know that. There's been countless studies done just within the last, 10 years, that getting outside improves our cognition, it improves our immune function, etc. It helps us emotionally. We know that. We all feel better. Most of us feel better when we get outside. Getting outside is kind of the first step, if you will, in a conservation ethic as well. Because we don't really want work toward conserving something unless we appreciate it, we understand it, we have a passion for it. So the first step is getting out and learning about it and exploring it. So a lot of what we do is encourage people to establish that personal relationship with the outdoors. From that, it's going to carry forward. We hope it would carry forward with more than sometimes it does, and I guess I won't get political here. We try to establish that personal connection. So we educate people about the natural resources, and we provide opportunities for them to get out and enjoy being outside and conserve our natural resources. That's kind of a long-winded explanation of our mission statement. Let me back up a little bit. The county conservation system in Iowa is a remarkable system. Every county in the state has a conservation board. That conservation board is made up of 5 volunteer citizen members. That board then oversees their conservation department. Every conservation department in the state is a little bit different. There is no recipe for what a conservation board does. There is a, if you will, possible ingredient list set up in Iowa code that says a conservation board can do this, 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 and this. And then each county kind of, you know, sets its own program and own policies on what they accomplish. At the heart of the conservation system, though, is what I mentioned first, is that instead of being done on a regional or on a statewide basis, it's done right at home. Each county directs its own program. So you have that local control, local priority setting, etc., of what you do as a county. Not very many other states have that kind of program. So it's wonderful that we have it. Just wonderful. Of course, that conservation board then is appointed by the Board of Supervisors of the county. And our board right now, Jim Pease is our chair. Some of you maybe have heard him on the radio or met him. Some of you maybe know him. Was a professor at Iowa State University for some time. In fact, was one of my teachers there when I went to school there. But he is our chair. And then we've got Al Weber is on the board right now. Joyce Hornstein is on the board right now. Some of you may know these names. Ted Tedesco and a new board member that we just appointed, I guess this last Monday, is Craig Myers. He lives near Nevada. And then Wayne Clinton is our ex officio member from the Board of Supervisors. So that's our board. And when I talk about what each county does a little bit different, let me tell you a little bit now. I'll dial in on Story County and what we do. So I'm going to give you kind of a nutshell version of what we do here. Story County, and this is one of the reasons that I came back to Iowa, was this opportunity. Story County Conservation Board is known throughout the state and even broader for its environmental education efforts. We have an incredible staff of naturalists that work in all the school districts throughout the county. We got 4 people on staff. That's all they do is programming and planning, etc. We have over 30,000 contacts a year, and so we're in, like I said, we're in every school district. We do public programming as well, and we're trying to, if you will, facilitate a little more public programming and not sacrifice what we do is so importantly with the schools. In fact, if any of you have been to McFarland Conservation Center this time of year, there are school children everywhere. Everywhere. It's wonderful to see. So we have a relationship, like I said, with all of the districts. Our program in 2012 was named the best environmental education program in the state for the larger conservation boards, so 3 or more naturalists. That's an incredible honor. We also had another staff member that same year, one of our naturalists, you may know her as well, Linda Zelotel, that she received an award for environmental excellence, Aldo Leopold Award. So it's just incredible. Just incredible. The passion that we have on staff and the depth of knowledge and skills. Really concerned about getting out and working with people and talking to kids, giving people the opportunity to get outside and to learn about that, because that is where it starts. So our education program is just top-notch. And then y'all mentioned some of our areas. We have about between 3,400 and 3,500 acres that we manage through our conservation program. That's our parks. So we have quite a few. We always like to have more. Iowa ranks 49th in the country for public land, which for me is just the last 10 years I've been in Alaska, and Alaska probably ranks number 1. So for me, it's a bit of a change. We do rank so low. Lots of reasons for that. You guys are probably familiar with those reasons. But we'd like to continue to grow that. Of those 3,400 acres, we've got about 1,400 acres that we allow public hunting on. So that's quite a few. Some of our marshes, some of our greenbelt area, quite a few public hunting areas that we have along Heart of Iowa Nature Trail for some of that section. Most of that except what's near the cities. And then we have our trail network. We have about 90 miles of trails, so it doesn't seem like we might have that much, but we do. We have the Skunk River Greenbelt Trail. You're probably familiar with that. We don't have complete continuity on that yet, but eventually we'd like to have that Greenbelt Trail go all the way from Ames to Story City. We just have a few sections there that we don't have continuity yet, but we'd like to have that. We have the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. Are most of you familiar with that one? Heart of Iowa Nature Trail goes from Slater over to and all the way through the county, through Collins and into Marshall County to Rhodes and eventually connects up to Marshalltown. So I could talk hours and hours just about trails alone. We always have trail projects, and we want to continue to develop those trails because the use of trails these days is just incredible. You know, Iowa, as you're well aware, is having a rural to urban migration. With that, we're in one of the counties that our population is increasing, along with Polk and so many others in central Iowa. With that, everyone's looking for recreational opportunities, and trails are one of those ways that they get that. So we have several trails. We also have the Prairie Rail Trail, which is in the northern part of the county, and it goes from Ziering to Roland. That is an abandoned rail right away as well. One that we're working on now, you might find this a little odd, but one that we're working on now is called the Skunk River Water Trail. So the state is developing a new program called Water Trails. And we're promoting these just as that, as a water trail, as a place that people can paddle. So we've got 12 different access points along the Skunk River, starting up at Story City and ending down on Highway 210 across the southern part of the county. So we're working with the state to try to designate that as a official state water trail and get some more recognition, I guess, if you will, and assistance with maintaining that. And then you're probably all familiar, you know, you mentioned Hickory Grove. That is our largest park, our largest campground, most heavily used park, and just an incredible resource. So those are some of our areas, and I could, again, be here quite some time going into more areas, and if we have time at the end and you want to hear more about some of our areas, just ask away or I'll go through some more. Another program that we have is our Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management Program, IRVM program. So that program really works toward creating habitat, if you will, along roadsides. We have about 5,400 acres of roadside right-of-way in the county. That is significant. When you look at the fact that we only have 3,400 acres in the county that we own as conservation areas, when you add those roadsides, you know, that doubles the number. So we try to manage those roadsides for habitat. We try to manage them for native species now to the extent that we can. Roadside management has come miles, no pun intended, over the last several years in Iowa. Most counties have a roadside vegetation management program that tries to incorporate, when it can, native vegetation. Now, in some counties, that program is operated under the Secondary Roads Department. We're fortunate that we operate that program out of conservation. Some of the things that that we do through there is lots of seeding, burning roadsides. You may have seen that. We do that on a regular basis. This year, we weren't able to do as much burning as we like. The conditions just didn't allow. So we do try to do that. We do a lot of seeding. We do a lot of burning. We do chemical applications. So, of course, we are out there trying to control brush and chemically as well. Mechanically, chemically, and fire, and we have a toolbox that we can use, and we try to use whichever technique works best for that given area. Now, of course, we can't plant all of the roadsides back to native. Native vegetation, as you're well aware, is taller than non-native vegetation. In places where it's tall, it can inhibit sight lines, and we know how important that is, of course, on roadways. So we can't put native vegetation in certain areas. It also can, in fact, drifting in the winter, and there's different schools of thought on how much that really impacts it. But at any rate, those are considerations that we have to have. But we try to manage those, again, 5,400 acres, the best that we can to meet public safety as well as habitat and vegetation, you know, conservation. So in addition to just the roadsides, we started last year with a new program under our IRVM program, but dedicated to the open drainage ditches. You're probably familiar, you know, much of Iowa is tiled. Much of Iowa, the tiles lead into open drainage ditches, separate from the roadsides. We haven't, you know, over the last several years, haven't given as much attention to maintenance of those drainage ditches as they need. To make a long story short, now we're in a situation where we are making that effort and we are trying to correct some of the issues that have happened in the drainage ditches over the last several years. And what I'm getting at, namely, is brush and trees that grow up inside on the slopes, on the inside slopes of the ditches and down in the ditch, and that inhibits the function of the ditch. We need to address that, but we need to do it not just by going in and clearing everything within the drainage area, but we need to do it, again, with that conservation emphasis. We know we need to maintain functionality of that ditch, but also, again, harken back on Iowa ranks 49th, we can do that in a way that on the inslopes of the drainage ditches and down in the bottoms of the ditches, we need to clear that. We can't leave trees or brush there. But on the upsides, on the back slopes or on the benches there on both sides of the ditch, we can. We can facilitate native shrubs or native bushes, and we'll try to do that in those areas that we can. Wild plum, excellent bush that we can plant. So that drainage... anyway, that's kind of a Cliff Notes version of our IRVM program. And again, tremendous staff in charge of all of these programs that I've talked about.
This is KHOI 89.1 FM, community radio for the heart of Iowa. If you've just joined us, we are listening to a presentation by Story County Conservation Director Mike Cox. This talk is part of the League of Women Voters year-long lecture series. It was held on Thursday, May 16th at Northminster Presbyterian Church in Ames. Let's rejoin the proceedings.
Now I'm going to talk a little bit about some of our current projects. One is, and this is probably the most timely and one of the most exciting projects that we've had in years, and that is Dakin's Lake expansion. This is just a win-win-win all the way around, this project. And let me tell you about it. Does everyone know where Dakin's Lake is, first of all? It's just north of Ziering. In fact, immediately north of Ziering. Interesting history on that land. That land was homesteaded by the Dakin's family. That land has never been in anyone else's hands other than the Dakin's family and now Story County Conservation. That is incredible. So way back when, Elijah Dakin's, Solomon Dakin's, two brothers, they homesteaded that, and back in the 20s, the best guess is we think it was in the 20s, built a little pond on the area and used it for ice for the town of Ziering and recreation opportunities for the town, etc. And rainfall took that dam out a couple times. It was rebuilt, and then again it was washed out just prior to 1950. And it was rebuilt. That area was home to the National Soil Convention that year. Was there in Ziering. Incredible honor to have that National Soils show right there. And so it was held on the site. And so they built a new lake then and made it bigger. They did demonstration plots, so they demonstrated terracing and all kinds of other things, and somewhere around 12,000 people in attendance. So it was a wonderful event. And like I said, they built this pond. That pond's still there today. The county acquired that land much later than that even. We leased it for a while, and then we acquired it, I think, in 1970, give or take a year or two. And we acquired some acreage, of course, to go along with that. So we built the Dakin's Lake Park. And so right now, Dakin's Lake Park consists of 10-site campground, a youth camping area, and nature trails around the lake. Beautiful area. In fact, every year, the mayor of Ziering has the Mayor's Cup, and it's a fishing tournament at Dakin's Lake. The community loves it. You know, but back in probably the late 70s, early to mid-80s, we realized, hey, this lake is silting in. That lake has a watershed of about 850 acres, and it's a 5-acre lake. So when you design a lake in anywhere, but in Iowa in particular, we're very concerned about the watershed to lake area ratio, and it's way out of skew with 850 acres of watershed to 5 acres of lake. That is not sustainable. It is not a tenable situation. We've known for years that we're losing that lake. For years, we've had to keep an aerator there in order to maintain any viable fishery. But a couple of years ago, we decided that, hey, we really need to do something about that. It's been talked about for years. So we set out on a program with the Board of Supervisors to establish a funding mechanism to help us build a new lake. So, did you have a question?
Yeah, can you explain what a watershed is, please?
Yeah, you bet. Watershed, let's see, I'm trying to think of a good analogy to explain it. A watershed is the area that the water drains from that area into a central, into a river or a creek or something like that. Of course, here, of course, we're in the Mississippi River watershed because our water ends up in the Mississippi. But then the further you go up the watershed, you get into smaller watersheds, if you will. You look at the lay of the land and the contours of the land, and you determine the height of the land around that, and essentially you kind of define the bowl where the water at that lake comes from. But that's what a watershed is. So we like to see watershed to water ratio of about 60 to 70 acres of watershed to 1 acre of lake. So we were well beyond that at Dakin's Lake. And so what we've done now, we work with the supervisors, as I mentioned, to come up with a way we can fund a new lake. Last year, the supervisors established a TIF program, and we'll use that funding then to build a new lake. So we've spent this last year doing design work and doing our permitting work, and we're almost there. We are behind schedule. We set a very ambitious schedule, but we do have it completely designed. I'll talk a little bit about that here. Waiting on some final permits now. In fact, I think every day I have conversations with the folks that are working on giving us our permits. So we are a little bit behind. We wanted to already have construction on the ground there, but we're not quite there yet. We are aiming for a opening of July of next summer. That's a rough projection at the moment, since we don't have all of our final permits yet. Really exciting project. So let me tell you a little bit about it. We just purchased an additional 65 acres there, with the help of the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation and generous support from the Dakin's family. We bought the land from the Dakin's family through the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. So we just completed that. What we will do then is build this new lake. It's going to be a 15-acre lake, and it will be in series with the existing lake. The water bodies will be connected. In fact, on normal pool, a normal water height for the lake, you'll be able to canoe from one lake to the other. That's about the biggest. We wanted to facilitate that connection. We had to for engineering reasons as well. But we wanted to facilitate that connection so that a canoer or a boat could get from one to the other. But we had to keep it small enough because one of our other goals with this project is to improve water quality. We want a sustainable system now, not a system that's out of balance with what the topography can handle, which is what we had. So we have to minimize that water connection so we're not getting siltation in the new lake. So the old lake essentially becomes a siltation basin. We may at some point consider, dredging or something in the old lake, but for now, that's a siltation basin. So the new lake, like I said, it'll be about 15 acres, 24 feet maximum depth. So that gives us all kinds of options for a fishery. We're working with lots of people from the community there at Ziering. One of the things we learned early on in design process is how important that lake was for fishing. Even though it's a 5-acre lake, it was probably 8 feet deep. not very deep, and that's why we had to aerate it. Boy, people just love fishing there. You know, the winter before last, how warm it was? I was there one January day, middle of the day, middle of the week, and it was a nice January day, but I saw three different groups of people, and three groups of people, two of them were hiking, and then one group was fishing. And wow, that doesn't, in some instances might not seem like a lot of people, but for Dakin's Lake in that area, and that was really good in January in the middle of the day. It's heavily used. The community loves that. So we've got a win-win situation here. We'll build a new lake, provide all kinds of more opportunities. We're going to stock it with support of DNR and with private hatcheries. The community is set up a donation fund if people want to donate to the fisheries, because we will have to buy some fish. If we were just going to rely on DNR for their stocking, we've worked closely with DNR all the way through this design process. Well, I had a group from the community come and say, hey, can we work with you on this? If we work with you, we might be able to have catchable fish there, 1 to 3 years earlier than if it was solely DNR hatchery fish that were being stocked. And we thought, well, let's talk. Let's have that conversation, because who doesn't want catchable fish earlier? So we all have an agreement on a stocking plan that some DNR hatchery fish and some private hatchery fish that's going to have catchable fish there in 2 years. So again, that's just an example of the energy behind this at the community, and they're raising money for it. So again, getting back to what's involved there. So we've got the lake, we've got the fishery, we'll have a boat launch there, we'll have a dock, we'll have fish cleaning station, we'll have a picnic pavilion, we'll have a 30-site campground. Modern campground, wonderful area. Each campsite will have electricity and water. There won't be any full hookup sites, so there won't be sewer to the sites, but we will have then, in addition, of course, a modern shower house. That will be nice. We're going to have a natural playground as well. Interesting idea on the playground. One of our naturalists and staff was looking at that playground and said, wouldn't it be neat if we designed a playground to be like the lake? When kids are in the playground, they'll essentially be, quote, underwater. Let me finish here. And maybe I can shed some light on this. So the playground will essentially be kind of in a little bowl. There'll be rocks around the edge, and there'll be slides from up on bank down into the, quote, water, okay? And then down in the, quote, water, we'll have rock climbing, we'll have log piles, and we'll have stumps and those kinds of things. All those things are fish habitat. So we'll have that down kind of in the depths of the playground. And then we'll have traditional slides going down into the playground. And then we'll have traditional swings as well up on the edges, so be a wonderful playground, and again, natural. A couple traditional pieces, but mostly natural. Story County Community Foundation helped us buy some of that equipment. We are restoring several wetlands there for lots of reasons. A, because primarily because we want to restore them, and secondarily because the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says we have to restore them. To do some wetland mitigation. And then there'll be lots of prairie areas on the land. Those are the major components of it. Tremendous project. We estimate that this project will have an annual economic impact in that area of conservatively $750,000. So that's significant. In fact, I've just been chatting with some people in Ziering, and they're saying, Mike, it is already having an effect, and we haven't broke ground yet. It's wonderful. So again, I hearken back to talk about quality of life, and what does that mean? Well, this is part of it. Watch for news in the paper, or watch our website. We'll be moving forward with that project pretty quickly. We hope to get bids out, you know, this summer. We hope to certainly do that soon.
Will the current trails be open while you're doing all the construction work?
That's an excellent question. And we just had this discussion at the Conservation Board meeting this last Monday. And I recommended to them that we not have that open for lots of reasons. So the Conservation Board did decide to close that park during construction, mostly liability reasons. The whole site is going to be a construction zone. If we made the contractors address the security, you know, our price tag's going to go up. What we will also do prior to construction is open up a promiscuous fishing. It's a DNR term, promiscuous fishing. I love it. I love it. But we will drain the old lake, and prior to draining the old lake, we'll let people fish to their heart's content. We have thought about, now here's another thing, we have thought about trying to, again, with all the interest in the fishery there, we have thought about trying to, and we may still do this if we can find a place to house them. We've thought about relocating some of the larger fish there and temporarily putting them in another spot and then pulling them back out when we get the new lake built to stock the new lake. So we haven't ruled that out yet. We might do that, so... You had a question.
Yes, as it relates to watersheds, what kind of partnerships do you have with the County Engineer's Office if you have assumed responsibility for watershed management?
Well, very good question. Very good question. We do not have authority over watershed management. You know, we have a maintenance program on the drainage ditches and control over the areas that we own. Other than that, we don't have that control. Is that what you were getting at?
Well, what I was getting at is what kind of partnerships have you worked out then with the County Engineer's Office so that you are working together to achieve your goal?
We have a very close relationship with our engineers department. In fact, our county engineer was on our design team for Dakin's Lake, and we work hand in hand with the engineer's office on our IRVM program and drainage ditch program. That's hand in hand. And we have a very good working relationship there. We regularly work with the county engineer staff on drainage tiles as well. So very good relationships there. Even the engineer's office doesn't have, you know, the engineer's office doesn't have complete control over watersheds as well. But we are really coming at it from a team as far as what's the best way the county can, within our roles, manage those areas. Let's see. Any other questions about Dakin's Lake?
Well, now, water quality. Last spring, we were concerned about possible hog farms near Hickory Park.
Hickory Grove Park,
yeah. And has that, and they didn't go ahead with
that one that they proposed last summer. Uh-huh. They may well move forward with another one. Uh-huh. We have had some conversation with them, with the family, since then. And yes, our understanding is that they do intend to. You know, that's always interesting. And again, getting back to what I mentioned, one of the wonderful things about Iowa and the county conservation system is that local control. Lots of things that the county does not have any control over, and confined feeding operations are one of them. That's all controlled by DNR. And in fact, DNR's hands are fairly, you know, fairly securely tied on what they can or can't approve. So that issue, you know, that confinement may still come up. You know, it will be something of concern to a lot of people.
Well, can I just add as a point of information that Jim Pease wrote a beautiful statement and gave it to the county supervisors, which led them to adopt a resolution that they would automatically not approve a confinement permit if it was shown that it would damage the environment. And part of that we have Jim Pease to thank for.
Correct. When this issue came up last summer, we had probably one of our most well-attended conservation board meetings, packed house. And at that meeting, we were fortunate that we had a lot of interest. And one of the things that the Conservation Board did at that time was pass a resolution in opposition to that specific proposal. That resolution that you're referencing then was passed on to the supervisors, and the supervisors passed their own resolution later on saying that they would not be supportive of a operation if they determined that it was to the detriment of the county. Now again, they can't approve or disapprove, but they can register comments. They can, if you will, register comments with DNR. And so I believe that you know, that was a good experience for us to go through that. And I expect that issue may come up again. You're right.
We probably should be drawing this to a close.
Yeah, that's fine.
If there are other burning questions, great, proceed with those, and then I'm sure you'll be here to talk with people individually.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
I have a question. You said early on in your speech that one of the great things is in Iowa, unlike many other states, we have local control in our county of what goes on. And I don't want to distract from all of the wonderful things that are going on in Story County, but all of our counties in Iowa are roughly the same size, but for most of those counties, they don't have very much money because they have a low population. So how do you balance those two? And I mean, what works well for us seems to be a disadvantage for many of the other counties in the state.
You're absolutely right that there are so many different dynamics when it comes to, and I'll just keep this to conservation boards, my answer to conservation boards, but so many different dynamics when it comes to how a conservation board operates within the county. And there's no two counties the same. Different levels of support and different levels of interest, different abilities from funding. There's lots of counties that couldn't afford to do the TIF project that we're doing at Dakins. On the other hand, Polk County just passed a referendum and got several million dollars for their conservation programs. Well, we're not Polk County. No. We can't do that. But on the other token, we're, you know, financially our tax base is such that we can accomplish some things. And so, you know, everyone goes about it a little bit differently, relies on different funding sources, grants, for one, and has different needs. So I know that's a difficult question to answer, and because there is no cookie-cutter approach to how it's done. It's just so dynamic.
But you still think that is the best way for a state to do it?
I think that's the best way for the counties to go about it, is because it really does put that emphasis on what the county wants to see. Now, let me step back from that a moment. Now, from as the state does it, I'd love to see more funding for DNR. Love to see it. more funding for the
for DNR just recently.
More, what's that?
What has recently in the past couple years happened to funding for DNR?
DNR has always been under the, it's kind of right down the sights, it seems like, under the gun. And yeah, we work part and parcel with DNR. And DNR has to have that role that only DNR can have in the state and has to be able to facilitate some of those needs that you talk about where there are areas that maybe wouldn't be able to do them otherwise. So I think that's key. There are DNR's watershed program, DNR's lake program, the state parks, all of those things. Those are critical. Those are critical. Many of you are probably familiar with the I Will program, the I Will vote, if you will, the 3/8 of 1 cent sales tax toward conservation efforts. That passed with remarkable margins, and it hasn't been enacted. It's not funded. You're right. It's not funded. You're right.
Many people wanted that.
You're right.
Not to be ignored, to be funded.
So.
That's a shame.
Yeah. REAP funding is another one. Again, I didn't want to make this political, but we do like to, you know, of course, my blue,
by so many people.
Yeah. And my blue sky is, hey, DNR fully funds REAP. The state fully funds REAP, I should say. Increases the watershed program funding. Increases water quality funding, water trails funding, straight rec trails funding. I could go on and on. Those needs are out there.
Yeah.
I was impressed that with the legislative listening session that was held in Ames last winter. Ames is fortunate. Story County is so fortunate. This is probably one of the... one of the counties that arguably has the most conscientious, environmentally conscientious citizenry and knowledge. And boy, that just makes my job so much easier, is I have folks like Jim Pease on the board and to give guidance and direction. And just wonderful, just wonderful. But at any rate, at that legislative listening session, I was a little surprised that, now this was certainly wasn't across the board, but surprised that maybe sometimes our messages aren't getting through or aren't getting to the people that maybe they need to get to. And I don't envy their position. I don't envy the legislators' position at all. They have to balance so many needs that they have, and so it is interesting. But I think the more that they hear from people on what we want, I heard loud and clear at that meeting, raise my taxes. Those of you that were there probably heard that. I want to pay for more parks, or I want to pay for cleaner water. That was loud and clear.
Thank you, Mike, so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Listening to KHOI's Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in Central Iowa. Today we featured a presentation, hosted by the League of Women Voters, featuring Story County Conservation Director Mike Cox. For more information about the Story County Conservation Center, visit storycountyiowa.gov and click on the Conservation Center link. That's storycountyiowa.gov. You can also find Story County Conservation Center on Facebook. For more information on the League of Women Voters, you can go to their website at aimslwv.org. Heart of Iowa theme song is The Fisherman by Leo Kottke. This show was engineered by Richard Morrison. I'm your host and producer, Deborah Bunka. Thank you for listening.